20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. And of course, you know, the one and only Perry Goldstein. You can find her on Twitter at Perry_Goldstein. She is back. She's better than ever. Perry, how the heck have you been?
Better than ever. I'm great, Andy. I'm excited to record this episode with you.
Yeah, me too. I think this is going to be a really fun one. Before we get there, I know we usually do this at the end, but I want you to tell the world all about Packs What She Said and its new home and everything like that. So tell us all about it.
Oh, at the beginning. Okay. Well, if you don't know me, I'm actually one half of another podcast called Packs What She Said with lovely Maggie Loney, who has her own day on the Pack A Day podcast. She is also part of the crew. And we host it once a week during the off season, twice a week during the regular season podcast about Green Bay Packers. You can find us anywhere you get your podcasts and on YouTube. And we recently, we like to call it Came Home to Cheesehead TV. We started with Cheesehead TV. We had a sabbatical, if you will, over at Odyssey. We appreciated our 2 years with them. It was very fun to be part of the Odyssey podcast network. But we felt like it was right. Just made sense for us to come home to Cheesehead TV. So we're back with the Cheesehead TV family, and you can find everything we do over on their website, on their app. We're going to have some really fun stuff with them this season. Probably some live shows, some other exciting things. You already probably seen a Tyler Herrick clipping us over on social media. So yeah, just very happy to be back and grateful for Aaron and Corey welcoming us back.
Well, congratulations on that and all the continued success with Packs What She Said. For those of you listening, watching, make sure to check it out once a week in the off season, twice a week during the season. They do an amazing job. Not only does Maggie have her own day on the Pack A Day podcast, she also has her own day today as we're recording this. It's her birthday. So Maggie, yes, we'll send this to you on Sunday so you get it right now. But happy belated birthday for listening on Monday. But she's the best. Perry's the best. So make sure to check them out. Again, Packs What She Said, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. All right, that brings us to our topic for the day. And what we're going to be doing, we're not going to be doing the 53-man roster projection or anything like that. But what I want to do is try to put together kind of what this depth chart could theoretically look like when the season starts. And that kind of comes with some unique roster battles that kind of inherently is going to be determining who gets some of these final spots on the roster. But more importantly, like, how do you, you know, sort of put together the depth chart with some of these interesting positions that I think there is going to be a lot of competition at. So we'll go one by one. And some of these positions, we might just say, all right, it's very clearly obvious. This is how it's going to work. Is there any debate? Nope. And then we'll move on to the next one. But some of these, I think, are going to have some really interesting conversation. And while maybe quarterback doesn't rank on the top of that list, you do get a very interesting conversation at the number two quarterback. So I think we're safe to say that Jordan Love is going to be number one. But Perry, we get that really interesting number two, number three battle between both Michael Pratt and Sean Clifford. We saw Sean Clifford struggle a little bit in that mini camp where he threw, what, 4 interceptions in 2 days of mini camps. By the way, it's not like Sean Clifford got a lion's share of the passing load to throw 4 interceptions. He got, you know, after Jordan Love got his, and even taking, you know, Michael Pratt taking some away for the threes, Clifford got left with only a smattering of plays, and within that threw 4 interceptions. Not great. And meanwhile, Michael Pratt, well, Matt LaFleur very much said he's drinking water through a fire hose, pump the brakes, like you're insinuating there on video. He still looked pretty impressive through OTAs and mini camps so far. So I know you didn't obviously get the opportunity to see them live, but I know you've been following everything. Where do you come out on who wins this number two battle and who ultimately is the backup for Jordan Love?
I think this is going to come down to preseason.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a battle of who looks better in preseason. If you had asked me going into this offseason, these offseason practices, I would have said unequivocally, Sean Clifford's QB2, Michael Pratt is QB3. He has so much to learn. He's, you know, probably going to be the guy running scout team, etc. But with what I've been hearing, and quite frankly, you're there, so it's a lot of what you are relaying and what the rest of the media team is relaying. it's really sounding like Michael Pratt's developing at a much more rapid pace than I think anyone would have expected, or at least is coming in much more ready than a seventh round pick would, you would think would be.
Right.
So I do think that if he looks really good in preseason, he could very much be gunning for QB2 this season. Now, I tend to go with the thought process that the Packers would lean on someone just with experience at QB2 because, you know, God forbid, knock on wood, anything happens to QB1, I think regardless, the Packers are screwed. However, we got to see a little bit of Sean Clifford and he can kind of hold his own. And I don't know if they feel that Michael Pratt could do that. So I think the nod still goes that way for me, but I think there's a lot to be determined still here.
I think that is beautifully said. And I agree with, I think, everything that you just put out there. A couple things. I think first of all, to your point, preseason is going to play a huge factor here. I think next, what I've been impressed with Pratt is almost, or I should say it this way. I'm even more impressed with Michael Pratt based on what Matt LaFleur said, that he is drinking water through a fire hose right now. I'm sure he's completely discombobulated in an entirely new offense. He's being asked to do things that he's never been asked to do before, and he's surviving. And that, like that, you can tell, like, that's what he's doing, right? Like, he's just, but he's, you can see the gamer in him. Like, he's just going out there and figuring it out on the fly and finding ways to get things done, even though he doesn't have anywhere near the grasp of the offense that you would think at some point he will. I love the leadership. I love just some of the intangible stuff that he's already shown. But as Matt LaFleur reiterated pretty clearly, he's still a long ways away from even understanding things from a playbook standpoint. And that's going to be a pretty hefty prerequisite to being the backup quarterback for Jordan Love on game days. I think my final answer here, and not, again, not knowing what's going to happen in preseason, is I could see a world where Sean Clifford is your number two quarterback, your backup. On game days, if something happens to Jordan, you're going to want somebody that has a little bit more experience in the offense, that can get the plays in, that can do everything that's needed. And if it's a, if Jordan has a 2 or 3, 4 game absence, that it's Sean Clifford in that situation where you can give him the opportunity. Can you go 2-2 in those 4 games, something like that? But if it were something worse, and we don't obviously want to speak that into existence, if it's like a 14 game absence or something, do you not maybe play the guy that has more of an upside, and maybe you let that just natural ability and that gamer mentality kind of come out a little bit more and see maybe what he has during the course of that process? But I would lean right now going into, I think it's Sean Clifford as the number two. And I think you maybe just let him come in and do what he can do, knowing this offense a little bit better in year two.
Yeah. And let's hope the latter just doesn't
never happen. Agreed. We're on the same page there. Let's move to running back. This is another interesting one on that number two line. We clearly know Josh Jacobs is going to be your starter. He's going to be as much of a bell cow as there still is in the NFL. He's going to be that guy. But number two becomes very, very interesting. You've got the young upstart Marshawn Lloyd, who's looked fantastic in OTAs and minicamps. Sans pads, long way to go. And then you've got the AJ Dillon, who is back for year 5 on a interesting veteran contract, 1-year deal. Very minimal signing bonus, but clearly knows the offense, is coming in phenomenal shape, is, you know, familiar with how to pass protect for Jordan Love, which is going to be a key part, not really turnover prone, and can give them that running back that kind of gets better through the course of the year and, you know, can be a little bit dangerous more come November, December, January. So I'll ask you, where again do you come out on this number two running back battle, knowing that again it is still very early at this point?
This is tough. I'm actually leaning Marshawn Lloyd. I'm really high on this kid. I just feel like he is, and you've seen him in practice, and you want to temper your expectations on a rookie, but I feel like he's got this really fun, like, explosivity to him that AJ Dillon just doesn't have. Yeah. And there's like a level to his game where you get him in the open field and there's really no catching him. And I think as a complement to Josh Jacobs is going to be really fun. Now, granted, there's things that he's going to need to have to do that I don't know that he can do yet, like pass pro, right? Yeah. Like the blocking that they ask running backs to do. Those are non-starter prerequisites to being a running back, period, in a Matt LaFleur offense, but especially RB2. So that's my caveat there. And we already know that AJ Dillon can do those things, but I think AJ like really hurt himself with his play last season. And now he's contending with a Josh Jacobs and a very exciting young talent. And I have a hard time seeing him just catching up. And I say that like with a very heavy heart, because I want him to, and I want, you know, and I really want to see him get back to the, you know, rookie season AJ Dillon that we got to see. But I don't know. I think he's going to be very situational, and we're going to see Marshawn Lloyd much more often in the backfield.
I think there's been a bit of a transition. I talked about a few years ago, clearly they had Davante Adams as a playmaker, but Green Bay kind of had too many glue guys and not enough playmakers. You had, you know, guys like Alan Lazard, who's kind of that, and he can be a possession, but he's not like a big time playmaker. And you've got guys like Mercedes Lewis, who's a phenomenal blocker. Love Mercedes to death, but very clearly not a playmaker. Robert Tonyan at that point wasn't really a playmaker, kind of more of a glue guy. You just had all these guys that were, you know, guys that can help you and guys that can maybe set up some other guys for success. And they're not bad players by any means, but they weren't the guy that you could get the ball in their hands and take it the distance at any given moment. And I think we've really seen a swing, and the 49ers and the Dolphins have been really the two teams, in my opinion, that have really swung this in an aggressive way, where you got to have guys everywhere on the field that you can get the ball in their hands and they can make plays all the time. Like, no matter who you're getting the ball to, they are dangerous. And I think Miami took it to an even, you know, higher level last year with some of the stuff they're doing with all their speed on offense. And I just think Green Bay has made this swing as well, where you don't see the Mercedes Lewis. You kind of have an Alan Lazard type and a Malik Heath, but he's going to be more of a bit player. You've kind of got a Ben Sims, but again, he's going to be more of a bit player. This is going to be Tucker Kraft on the field, Luke Musgrave on the field, Watson, Reed, Wicks, Melton, Dobbs, Josh Jacobs, Marshawn Lloyd. You're going to have playmakers on the field everywhere at all times, all at once, and it's going to be fun. And that's what I think is going to push Marshawn Lloyd over the edge here. Is there going to be a role for Dillon? Sure. Is there going to be a role for a Ben Sims? Yes. Will there be a role from Lee Keith? Probably. But this is a playmaking league. You got to have playmakers. Marshawn Lloyd's the playmaker. He gets the nod at number two.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree. I think you make a really nice point that those guys used to be the features of the offense, and those types of players are no longer the features. They just come in and spot duty when necessary. And unfortunately, if that's who you are as a player, you're going to lose out on playing time and you're going to find yourself falling on the depth chart.
And the thing I like about this is it doesn't mean like there are going to be plays where Tucker Kraft has to be that glue guy, which is great. He can do that, but he's a playmaker too. And there's going to be times where guys like Christian Watson or Bo Melton, these guys who are also very good blockers, are going to have to be the glue guy. And they can do that, but they also can be playmakers. So I just think this works out at a much higher level. And I think it's going to make the offense that much more explosive. Just makes me so excited, especially for what I've seen already from Marshawn Lloyd. Let's go to wide receiver. Probably not as much of a discussion here. More of just, I don't even know if we want to rank Perry, like how you would kind of put these in a target. Like, I think it's probably clear if you're going to keep kind of six receivers, I think it's probably clear Malik Heath is your six. I think it's probably mostly clear, although I do think he has a role, that Bo Melton is kind of your five. And then I think you have some version of Watson, Reed, Dobbs, and Wicks that are going to get the priority and primary snaps as your one through four, with Reed getting a ton in the slot, you know, Watson and Dobbs probably a ton on the outside, Wicks working a little bit of everywhere with a smattering of Melton, and maybe some of those glue guy plays from Malik Heath every now and again, if he gets active on game day as a number six wide receiver, or if there's injuries elsewhere.
Yeah. I think you said it really nicely. They don't have a one. We're not going to get into that. Not the conversation here. I think the question really is just who they carry over and what happens to kind of the fringe roster guys. And again, this isn't a 53-man roster prediction show, but just from like a depth perspective, there's the clear and obvious guys who are going to take the bulk of the snaps, and it's Watson, Dobbs, Reed, Wicks. I think Bo Melton and Malik Heath have made the case for themselves that they deserve to also be carried onto the roster and like have their roles carved out for them again. But the drop off is very clear. So if you are thinking main characters and secondary characters in the wide receiver room, I think that's more of how I would bucket it. And then, you know, you'll see what happens with the Samori Toure's and the Grant Duboses and things like that. So maybe that's main character energy and second character energy.
I love main character energy. If I can get second character energy nerdy for a moment, because that's what I do, I am sort of intrigued. Like, let's say Dubose and Toure get cut. Let's say in this, you know, scenario, we talked about the six guys, and then that would kind of leave Dubose and Toure on the outside looking in. Assuming they don't get claimed somewhere, that would be practice squad eligible in Green Bay. I think if I were the agent for either Grant Dubose or Samori Toure, I think I would say, we got to get you out of Green Bay. They have six super young, super talented wide receivers. And the only way you're going to see the field is through injury. And even then it might be temporarily. Like, let's get you to some other team that has the ability to, or maybe just doesn't have the young, talented wide receiver core that Green Bay does. The only reason I bring that up is, usually Green Bay has been in this situation where they've even had like one or two guys in the practice squad that at any given moment you could call up and be ready to go. If you would lose a couple of those guys, like I think Julian Hicks, Dimitri Stanley, one of those guys could be a practice squad guy, but it's not necessarily somebody you feel super like, you know, calling up and putting on the field in any significant way. Doesn't matter a ton in, you know, June 17th, 2024. No, but just kind of one of those interesting things I'll be keeping an eye on when we start doing practice squad signings at the end of, you know, end of cutdown days, which of course I'm already nerding out about. So you wouldn't expect anything else, Perry, from me than exactly that.
2 months early practice squad signings from Andy Herman.
That's going to be the next episode. Let's predict the 16 man. Like everyone else is going to be doing 53 man roster predictions. We're going to be doing who's going to make the 16 man practice squad. And it's going to be the most amazing thing ever. We're going to do a 16 man practice squad draft. And no, I'm just kidding. All right. tight end is easy. I think you've got Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave as a combined 1-2. They're both going to see the field a ton. They're both going to rotate in and out depending on what type of play call is being, you know, called on any given play. I think Ben Sims is your three. You've got Tyler Davis as a fringe guy that maybe makes it as a four, maybe doesn't. But I think that's probably just the end of the conversation right there, unless you feel differently on anything.
I'm surprised you feel that way about Tyler Davis. Do you feel that way because he's working back from injury or just simply because his role to you is more of a special teamer?
In which way, that you feel like you think he will make it or maybe wouldn't make it?
That you find him more of a as a fringe guy.
I think in the NFL, when you've already started to get some wear and tear in your body, you've had an ACL or things like that, you're not necessarily, you haven't shown that you have a high level ability, meaning like Tyler Davis's ceiling is probably number three tight end with special teams ability and core special teamer. And it probably gets him maybe two or three more years in the league. For the most part, what NFL GMs are thinking with that sort of stuff, and again, clearly you need some guys that can do exactly what I just mentioned. You need those type of players, but you're trying to put people on your roster that are going to show some upside or like have that upside to develop into starting caliber players or are going to be maybe a little bit more. I think Ben Sims is the number three clearly because I think he could be a number two. I think even he could evolve into something even better than that. He might not ever get the opportunity because of Kraft and Musgrave on the roster, but I'm pretty high on Ben Sims. I do. And I think the other thing where I talk about Tyler Davis that way is you're going to end up with some interesting situations where if you want to keep a third quarterback because you want to keep Clifford and Pratt, that's going to limit a roster spot. If you want to keep a 10th offensive lineman, which I could easily see them doing, that's going to limit it. If Dubose, for instance, has an amazing preseason in camp and they want to keep a 7th wide receiver because they don't want to lose that guy, that could limit a spot. Like there's just so many of those different ways. Brenton Cox is a 5th edge rusher. We could go on and on, but those things will complicate the roster math to the point where a guy like Tyler Davis could be a fringe guy simply because of just numbers.
Hey friends, wherever you are in your walk in life, whatever your financial situation is, and whatever phase of life you may be in, we're all working towards our financial goals in our own unique way. Whether it be purchasing your first house, buying a new car, or even setting plans to travel the world, bad, below average, or non-existent credit can hold you back from that next big purchase and can sidetrack those goals. That's where Kickoff comes in. Kickoff is the fastest and easiest way to safely jumpstart your credit and hit those financial goals quicker. My favorite aspect of Kickoff, and the reason I recommend Kickoff to my friends and family, is because it's insanely easy to use. You can sign up for a monthly plan within minutes, and you can start building credit immediately for as low as $5. Plus, check this out. Users with credit under 600 increase their credit by an average of 30 points within the first month. 1 month, 30 points higher. That's because Kickoff is a safe, easy, and legit credit hack with no catch and no credit checks. And you can cancel at any time, hassle-free. Kickoff has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store and 98% are 5 stars. So join over 1 million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Get your first month for $1. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C, getkickoff.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate the offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 30-point increase in first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for Kickoff premium customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payments and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary.
Yeah. Totally. It's unfortunate when you get an injury like that and you're starting to develop and they're starting to use you a little bit more in the offense when you are like clearly proving yourself on special teams, right? Because that's such a nice way for a player like Tyler Davis to latch onto a roster. And he was the most used special teamer on the Packers, right? And then an injury can kind of derail you. And a guy like Ben Sims comes in and is playing really well in that tight end three role and just totally jumps over you. As far as tight end 1-2, I agree with you. They're interchangeable in my mind. I think Luke Musgrave probably gets the nod a little bit at tight end one simply because he's more of that pass catching. If you really want to get into like the weeds of it all, but they're a pair. And I think especially in a Matt LaFleur offense, in that he loves his two tight end sets and they're both going to be on the field, I'm imagining, together a lot. It doesn't really matter who's one or two.
My hot take recently is I actually think Kraft is the better tight end of the two. I think he is slightly T-end one. And then Musgrave is T-end one. But it's not like really, because again, they're both going to be on the field so much and they're going to be interchangeable. But I think what I saw to Kraft in the second half of last year, I don't think it gets talked about quite enough. He was fantastic as a true starting tight end when Musgrave was out, like doing everything. And what he did from going from a guy in training camp and in OTAs where you could just tell like his mind was swimming at an unbelievable pace. Like as a blocker, you could tell he was really going through it and coming from not a small school, but a little bit of a smaller school. That the transition was harsh. And then, you know, he really didn't get like, even early on, you go watch, like it was Musgrave and even Ben Sims was getting some snaps ahead of Tucker Kraft just because he was a better blocker at that point. And then by the time Musgrave goes out and Kraft takes over, and then he just puts together a phenomenal second half of the year, just like really good blocker, really good pass catcher. We saw some ridiculous stuff run after the catch where he's hurtling over people and making people like, I don't know. I'm a believer. I'm a big Kraft believer. I think he ultimately could end up being actually the better tight end of the two, which is saying something because we all know what Musgrave is capable of. And he could easily be, I think Musgrave can be a top 15, top tight end in the league, sincerely. And I'm still saying, I think Kraft can be better than that.
Hey, you're talking to a double Tucker Kraft owner in Dynasty Fantasy here. So I'm with you on the Tucker Kraft hype. 100%, especially that, you know, that tiptoe on the sideline. Oh. Gorgeous. Yeah. Yep. Big fan.
Do you have him in our league?
Yeah.
I might have to send a trade proposal through.
I'm not giving him up.
Sorry. All right. Well, then I will not. But that might be some conversation we need to have at another time. Let's go through offensive line really quick. I think this is an interesting one. Maybe not really quick. We'll see. But clearly, we got to figure out the starting rotation and then who that kind of number six guy is. Because I think there's six guys, ultimately. Elton, Rashid Walker, Josh Myers, Jordan Morgan, Zach Tom, and Sean Ryan. Like, I think the starting five is going to come from that six. And I think the six guy will be who's ever remaining. And then you've got to kind of get to where the depth falls after that. So what I kind of want to focus on is not maybe the last two roster guys or things like that, but who's your starting five? Who ends up being that sixth guy? And then who are your two other guys that are kind of active for game days if you had to, again, decide very early today?
Oh, my God. This one, like, keeps me up at night. I can't imagine what the Packers are doing right now. So for me, and I would love your thoughts on this, but for me, like, when I think about offensive line, everything stems from left tackle, right? You start with left tackle and you build from there. And this is interesting for you?
Only because I agree with you, but I'm interested to see where you're going to go with this. Because, all right, let me even pause you before you get to finish. Because then I would say, all right, if you want to build it from there, do you start Zach Tom at left tackle and start building him there? Or, like, so now I'm very intrigued.
Why would I put Zach Tom at left tackle?
Because you just said it's the most important spot on the offensive line and you start building from there. So would you not want one of your best offensive tackles or best offensive linemen at that spot?
But I also want to keep the guys who are excellent at what they do at the spots that they're excellent.
Beautiful. I'm with you. All right, we're good.
You know, so there's like two kind of variables that you're contending with, but the reason that I start at left tackle obviously is quarterback's blind side. And I think Rashid Walker did a really nice job last season. And I think he got better over the course of the season too. So it's like, do you want to hinder a guy's development when he's pretty clearly on the up and allow your first round pick to sit and develop? Or do you want to play your first round pick where you think that he's best? That is like the ultimate question if you're building out of left tackle. I don't know. Either way, they're both going to be on the roster. Let's just go with we start the season with Rashid Walker.
Okay.
Because that's what I feel like they're going to do. Elton stays at left guard, obviously. Again, keep your guys who are excellent at what they do, where they're excellent at where they do it. You're probably starting the season with Josh at center unless somebody blows you out of the water in preseason. But I just don't know if I see that happening quite yet. At least I haven't heard anything. Right guard continues to be a question mark. But right now, Sean Ryan ultimately has the nod, but there are plenty of people who are contending for that spot. And I'm fully on like the keep Zach Tom at where he's excellent at right tackle. But I can see a Jacob Monk like coming for the right guard spot. I don't know. This gives me like agita. It does. Because also, what if Jordan Morgan kicks out to right tackle and you move Zach Tom into center, and then you have your Rashid Walker, Elton, Zach Tom, Sean Ryan, Jordan Morgan.
I mean, the crazy thing is, if we go position by position, like Rashid Walker could start at left tackle, Elton Jenkins could start at left tackle, Jordan Morgan could start at left tackle, Zach Tom could start at left tackle. You could even put an Andre Dillard there. You've got five guys who could go left tackle. Like left guard could be Elton Jenkins, could be Josh, well, not Josh Myers, Elton Jenkins, Jordan Morgan, Zach Tom could go there, Sean Ryan could go there, maybe even a Jacob Monk. You probably got five guys who could go left guard. Center could be Myers, Jenkins, Zach Tom, Jacob Monk. Right guard could be Morgan, Jenkins, Zach Tom, Sean Ryan, Jacob Monk. Five, like you've got five different guys. And right tackle, we could do the exact same thing. You have five guys at least that could go at any single one of these spots. And now it's trying to find the right combination to make it perfect. It's never going to be perfect, obviously, but you're trying to. So I've been playing with a couple things in my mind. I was leaning one way, but I'm just kind of seeing where Jordan's at. I think he's going to need a little bit of time. I think you take it easy on him. I'm more apt at this point to start the way you basically ended the year and stick exactly like you said with Rashid at left tackle, Jenkins at left guard, Myers at center, Sean Ryan at right guard, and Zach Tom at right tackle. And maybe with Jordan, maybe you put him in a couple series at right guard for Sean Ryan. See what he does. See how he performs. Continue to put that pressure on Sean Ryan. Maybe you use him as that sixth offensive lineman for a handful of plays here and there just to get him some time on the field. Like, you could do that in some ways. Maybe you put him in a couple, you know, series for Rashid Walker at left tackle. You know, if Rashid's struggling or something like that, I think you can do some things like that as time goes on, but I'm more apt to kind of keep it as is. The other thing that I toyed with a little bit, if Green Bay was really wanting to get Jordan on the field, you know, they're going to want to try to get their first round pick on there sooner rather than later. I kind of want to stop trying to see him as much on the right side. He's played the left side his entire career. I kind of want to just keep him on the left. Now, if you want to kind of cross train him between guard and left tackle, I'm cool with that. I wholeheartedly believe that Elton is going to be just as great at right guard as he is at left guard. And I will also say that it intrigues me to put together a right side of the offensive line that has Zach Tom and Elton Jenkins next to each other, where if I need a run play on third and one, and I can run behind Zach Tom and Elton Jenkins, I'm going to feel pretty freaking good about running Josh Jacobs on that side if I want to go in that direction. So I wouldn't hate Rashid Walker at left tackle, Jordan Morgan at left guard, Myers at center, Jenkins at right guard, and Zach Tom at right tackle, with Sean Ryan kind of being the odd guy out if they wanted to get Morgan on the field. But I would love to keep that guy on the left side, keep him a little bit more comfortable, not have to, like, if you're going to already do the tackle guard thing, let's not do tackle guard and left side, right side, and have just his mind completely swirling. Let's try to keep him on one side. And then if you do keep him at that left spot and all of a sudden Rashid's struggling, or you want to kick him outside to left tackle, or Rashid gets hurt, at least now he just moves one spot to his left and can stay on his left side. And again, doesn't have to do a whole ton of movement. I kind of want my youngest guy did not have to do too much thinking at this point in his career. That'd be the other thing, but I'm more leaning towards keep the same five guys out there and then put Morgan in when you figure out whatever injury happens that you need to put him in for.
Yeah. Okay. Two things. One, I do agree that in this instance, at least to start the season, I think the simplest answer is actually the right answer. Like, it wasn't broke at the end of the season. I don't know if there's a reason to fix it, at least to start. So I'm with you. My question to the moving around is, yep, am I misremembering, or did we not see Elton struggle a little bit when they moved him over to the right side?
Yes.
Or do we think that was injury related?
A couple things. One, he did extremely struggled, but two things. One, it was at right tackle, not at right guard. When he's played at right guard in the past, he's been totally good. He's been good and fine. The other thing is, it was immediately following his ACL injury. So, like, he literally came back from the ACL injury. They put him at right tackle, which he had not played, I don't think, before that point, at least in the NFL. I could be misremembering on that, but they played him at right tackle. So now he's going from guard to tackle, and he's going from the left side to the right side, and he's coming off the ACL injury. And there were even times, like, he played for, like, I want to say 5-6 weeks, and then they had to shut him down for a week because he was actually, like, struggling with it a little bit. So, like, he was not 100%. He looked nothing like Elton. So if you were telling me that I had to move Elton to right tackle, I would be like, no way. I'm good. I don't want to see that. Anywhere in the interior, left guard, center, right guard, I totally feel Elton will just completely, you know, be himself, and I don't have any real major concern there.
Yeah. Okay, fair. I couldn't remember if it was guard or tackle.
Yep.
Where does Andre Dillard factor into this?
Interesting thing here with Dillard is, I think, first of all, your sixth guy on the bench with the lineup that we said, with Walker, Jenkins, Myers, Sean Ryan, and Zach Tom, 1 through 5. I think in that case, Jordan Morgan's your first guy off the bench. So whoever goes out, if it's a left tackle, it's probably just Morgan. If it's right guard, it's probably just Morgan. Right tackle, Morgan, et cetera. I think he's your first guy. And then I think Andre Dillard and, I'm going to say, Jacob Monk are probably your next two guys off the bench at that point, where you probably have Dillard be kind of number 7. And then I think Jacob Monk is number 8 as kind of that swing interior guy who can play left guard, center, right guard, and Dillard can be your backup left tackle, right tackle. So you're basically thinking of it this way. If anyone goes down, it's Morgan. And then after that, if a tackle goes down, it's Dillard. And if a guard or center goes down, it's Jacob Monk. So you've kind of got everything covered in every way, where you don't have to do a ton of rotating around. Just based on one injury, you kind of have the guys that can go in based on what position they play best.
Yep. That's how I saw it as well. I mean, especially, like, a Dillard is just a tackle, and I think it's good to just have a swing tackle anyway. And then Jacob Monk was drafted as an interior guy, and for his development, it doesn't make sense, especially with Andre Dillard on the roster, if anyone were to go down at either of the tackle positions to put Jacob Monk in that position.
No, totally agreed. Yeah. So I think we're kind of on the same page. I think you got to figure out that first, you know, who's the last starter and who's that number six guy. I think that's going to be a really interesting decision. And I know it gives you anxiety, but I think that's going to be the really kind of fun thing to keep an eye on this offseason.
It's just like, they do such a phenomenal job drafting and developing offensive linemen. They have good problems here. Like you said, you could look at every position and name 3 to 5 guys on the roster who could play each of the 5 positions on the offensive line. So you're kind of playing Tetris with fitting them in the right way, right? Good problems, but I don't envy them because at the end of the day, you're protecting the dude who you're about to pay mega millions to. And you've got to find the right 5 to do it.
And I think the other cool thing here too, that gives me less anxiety, is you do have options. And you know what? It might take a handful of weeks or maybe 10 weeks or 12 weeks to figure out what the best 5 is. That's okay. You can kind of experiment with some things. You can get by. They've got starting caliber players at all those spots. And now you can just kind of play with it through the course of the season to really find what group of 5 works best in the right order.
Totally. And like, they'll do a rotation. They're not afraid to do that.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. Which excites me too. I think it'll bring competition. And I think hopefully sooner rather than later, they will find the best 5 that they can put out there. I think defense for the most part is actually going to end up being a lot easier than the offense. Let's start on the edge. I think fairly self-explanatory. Gary and Smith are your starters. LVN's probably your next guy up that you want to get as many snaps as you can to help him develop. And Igbari is your 4. And then you get into the probably like Brenton Cox conversation as your 5. But I think that's just kind of, I think it's kind of easy. It literally can kind of rank them: Gary, Smith, LVN, and Igbari. Number 5, probably Brenton Cox.
Yeah, I don't have any notes there.
Deal.
To the contrary.
And I think kind of similarly at defensive tackle, where you've got Kenny, and I think you could see starters where it's Clark and Slayton on early downs still to kind of get your better run defender guys on early and obvious run plays or more likely run plays. But I think it's still like Kenny and Slayton are going to be your big guys. Devontae Wyatt and Carl Brooks are going to be more pass rush oriented, but are going to play more of that 3 technique and get upfield. And then Colby Wooden rotates in as your number 5 and probably rotates in a little bit as a number 5 defensive end on maybe some game day situations as well. But again, I think it kind of, you're going to have your, you know, probably Wyatt, Slayton, and I think the first 4 guys kind of rotate in, and then you've kind of got maybe Wooden as your 5.
Yep. It'll just depend on what look they want.
And probably Clark is your clear number 1, and then a little bit more rotational after that.
Yep.
Cool.
Absolutely.
All right. Off-ball linebacker, a little bit more interesting. You've got the additions of Edgerrin Cooper and Tyron Hopper. Isaiah McDuffie comes back, familiar with the defense. You've got Quay Walker, obviously. And then I think, you know, Eric Wilson seen some time in the 4-3. We'll see if that continues. But I think that the conversation here is, who are your 3 linebackers in the 4-3? Who are your 2 in the nickel? And then who's your 1 in the dime?
I think to start the season, it's Quay, Cooper, McDuffie.
Okay.
I think you're going to see a lot of Quay and Cooper as a pair.
Yep.
The dime is a good question. The dime is a really good question, because I feel like Cooper's probably going to end up being that dude. You've seen him more in practice than I have, but from what I've just read about his explosiveness to the ball, that feels, they're not going to play a ton of dime. So this is going to be like very rarely. So it doesn't matter. But to me, the main starters, because their base is nickel, is Quay and Cooper. Isaiah McDuffie is going to get pulled in as your kind of like next guy up. They love him. He obviously has the BC connection too. I think he played really nice in his like rotational spot duty also last season when asked. Then Tyron Hopper will have a role as a 4, as the four. To me, Eric Wilson is definitely more of your, everyone else is more of your special team.
Yeah.
I can't see anyone else really playing meaningful snaps on defense.
I think base is going to be what you mentioned to start, where it's McDuffie, Quay, and Cooper. But I think Hopper's going to push McDuffie sooner rather than later for that third linebacker spot. And I think by maybe midway through the year, if not sooner, we're starting to see Hopper get more of those snaps. I think it's going to be Quay and Cooper as your nickel. And then I think Quay starts as dime. But again, whether it's mid-year this year, end of this year, maybe by early next year at the latest, I think Cooper's going to take that at some point. I really do. I think he's that special.
Yeah. There's something about, I haven't seen him play yet, but just something the way I hear he plays, he fits that. He fits that perfectly. But again, it's not going to be often. They're not going to play a ton of dime. This isn't Mike Pettin. So they're not going to ask him to do that much, but I'm excited to see the way him and Quay pair together when they're playing base.
Let's hit safety quick, and then we'll come back and finish kind of with corner, because I think that's maybe a little bit more of an interesting conversation to end on. McKinney's your one. I think Bullard gets your two. I think Evan Williams ends as your three. I am actually going to say Anthony Johnson Jr. finishes kind of as your four, Oladapo as kind of a five. And then again, we talked about some of those roster decisions. Does a Zane Anderson or a Benny Sapp get a sixth based on special teams prowess? That'll be another kind of interesting conversation. But I think really here the conversation is between who's your four and five between Anthony Johnson Jr. and Ketan Oladapo. And we haven't seen any Oladapo yet, so it's near impossible to say.
I was going to say, that's a hard conversation to have right now when he's been hurt for every practice.
Yep.
Kind of unfair to knock him at the moment.
He's doing terrible. He's doing absolutely awful. Hasn't made a single play yet in any of the practices.
Get out of the boot, bro. I'm curious what about Evan Williams has made you put him at three.
I just think he has a higher upside. Obviously, they traded up for him in the fourth round. I think Anthony Johnson Jr. has done a fine job in that role in OTAs and minicamp so far, but I think the versatility of an Evan Williams is going to be so intriguing to them with what they can do on the field. And you get some three safety looks if they want to do that with Williams and Bullard and McKinney, three guys that can do a little bit of everything. And you could rotate one of those guys down into the slot. You could rotate both into the slot. You could put two guys high. You could just do anything and everything with those three guys on the field. I don't necessarily feel the same way about Anthony Johnson Jr. They've said over and over and over how they want these safeties to be able to do everything, be versatile, not basically have a tell when any of those guys are on the field or in a certain position. I think Bullard, Williams, and McKinney are going to give them that. I think that's what gives me a nod in that direction.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I agree with you with McKinney, Bullard being 1-2.
And of course, and to your point, I think that's clearly going to be a competition. I think even Bullard is going to have to continue to fight for that number two, even though I think he'll win it. I think there's going to be really fun competition for those spots, and I'm here for it. I'm excited for it.
It's going to be fun.
Let's finish here with corner. I think Jair is clearly your one. I think that probably goes without saying. You then have the battle for number two between Valentine and Stokes. I still think Nixon is your primary slot guy, although I do think Bullard or maybe a Williams could do a little bit of that from time to time. But I think Nixon kind of wins that slot job. I think Corey Ballantyne ends as your five, and Kalen King, assuming he makes the team, which I think he will, ends as your six. And then the big question is just Stokes or Ballantyne.
This one still stumps me.
I think it stumps the Packers too, to be honest.
Yeah, because we don't know. I mean, they're so high on Stokes. This one is going to be when the pads come on. This is going to be this gets answered when the pads come on. I think before preseason, we'll know. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but no, I can't see a lot of these guys playing a ton of snaps in preseason, quite frankly. And I think we'll know where Stokes is really at when the pads come on. I still give the nod to Valentine, just the way that he played last season and this style of defense with Jeff Hafley. I think it's going to be right up his alley, and like the development that he's going to take. But we've talked about it on this show a ton, where I don't know if necessarily like a CB2 is really going to exist. Maybe it was on our show when you were on Pax What She Said, but we had a really great discussion about like Jeff Hafley mixing in personnel when it feels right. And it not necessarily always sticking with like, okay, you were on the boundary and you were on this boundary and now you are in the slot and that is where you stay. Right. So it might even be like this, a similar conversation, the way we talk about the wide receivers, right? Where these are the guys that you're going to see on the field. They're going to get the bulk of the snaps. Maybe one day, one game, I should say, it'll be mostly Valentine because he matches up better with their wide receivers, or maybe it'll be Stokes. Maybe they move Ja in the slot, right? And we see all three of those guys on the field. I like that better. Again, I think it's like your main character energy and your secondary character energy here with Jair, Stokes, Valentine, Nixon being like the very clear starters. I know that's four corners and Perry, they don't play four corners. That doesn't make sense. But that's just, I think, what this defense is going to call for. And then you'll get Corey Valentine and Kalen King. And I think watch for Kalen King.
Could be a fun one.
I think watch for Kalen King. Yeah. I, you know, from what we hear, he could be a steal in this draft. But for now, I think it's those four and like, yeah, Jaw's the one, but I think the rest of it, similar to wide receivers, I don't know if it necessarily matters.
I think Stokes Valentine is the most fun roster battle that will take place in training camp. I think that will go down to the end. I think it's going to take preseason and training camp to get through it. And even like you said, I think there could be differences in different games with different matchups that they could go back and forth or maybe play in certain situations based on what they're better at. Like I could see a variety of things happening here. I'll lean Stokes just because that's what it's been so far. And I know they've only had two practices where Ja was there and, you know, they had a number two particular job or like role, and that was Stokes on both of those days. Every other day Ja wasn't there, so it was Stokes and Valentine both out there. But I'll just go with that for now until they prove differently. But I'm a big Valentine guy. I'm not quite as much a Stokes guy, but man, I just hope both of them ball out and play to the level that they're capable of, because that takes the defense on a totally different level than what it's been at with those guys playing at that level. And I'd be totally here for it. So I just want to see this corner room play to their capabilities. I don't think we've seen that in a while, and I'm hoping in this new defense we do this year.
Yeah, I think we will.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
Sign me up, Harry Goldstein. Last quick one. Who's your punt returner?
Punt returner, Jaden Reed.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. I mean, I think with Nixon getting so many kick returns in this new kick return style, plus being the nickel guy, I think you need to start taking some things off of his plate. He's a little bit more of an adventure at punt returner than he is at kick returner. He doesn't always catch it clean. Like there's been literally times, yes, he's literally caught it over his head. He double catches sometimes. He had that bad muff a season ago that cost Green Bay. I think there's times where you use him where you need a spark and you just say, screw it, we're going to take the risk and put him back there. But I think just the guy that's a little bit more safe can also give you that boost and is just really good is Jaden Reed. I don't know that there's anyone else really too much. Like, I guess you could maybe try. Like, I know, I think Evan Williams has done a little bit of it. Like, there's probably some guys that could try, but I don't know. Give me Jaden Reed.
Yeah. He did it very successfully. So again, and he's got the speed. So I don't want to see any more scary Keyshawn Nixon catches out there.
It'd be nice if, I don't even know, like there's not a, it'd be nice if Bo Melton could do it, like a Bo Melton, where like, cause like Jaden Reed, I really don't want to see Jaden Reed get hurt on a punt return. Like, and I don't even think Bo Melton's ever been back there. So I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but like somebody that's like your number five wide receiver that you're dying to get more touches to anyway, that like, if he did get hurt, it would be a huge bummer, but wouldn't be catastrophic to the offense. Like somebody that is also safe catching the ball. Like that would be kind of an ideal situation. And maybe it is, like if Evan Williams can show he can do it like really well, like maybe that could be somebody where, you know, you're not so worried about it, but I think I still lean Jaden Reed.
Yeah. Well, that was like, didn't Ja return kicks in college?
Punts.
And when he hunts. Yeah. And when he got to the NFL, we were all like, ooh, and they're like, yeah, he's not doing that. No, no way.
Yeah, there comes a time with some of these players where you're just like, yeah, they're not going to do that. And I think, you know, at some point you probably get there with Jaden Reed. I don't know if it's right away. He's still young enough. Maybe you feel comfortable with him doing it. I mean, Cobb did it for forever. So like you can get away with that, but we'll see. I think it's Jaden Reed. I'm with you. All right, Perry, I think that does it. Any final thoughts on our depth chart breakdown? Anything that you're dying to close on?
No, I think there's always going to be surprises when we hit the 53.
Yep.
So we'll look out for those. Obviously, some really exciting roster battles coming up. I hope the Packers figure out their offensive line. Don't keep me up at night. But yeah, we're getting to it. Everything's shaping up.
Figure out offensive line, figure out who your kicker is, and then we should be in pretty good shape watching the Green Bay Packers this year. Perry, you are phenomenal. Always appreciate you a ton. Now we went over it at the beginning, but tell everyone where we can find all your work.
Oh, yes. Just follow me on Twitter or follow the podcast at Packs What She Said Podcast. Twitter, YouTube, all everywhere you can find your podcasts, you can find us.
Of course, you can find her at Perry_Goldstein. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow this podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Perry and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.